This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
What does it mean to rock something? 2017 is an unpredictable year for the retail industry. Analysts say that it's going to be a bumpy ride, and those of you who are in retail could use some expert advice just to know what to look out for. Luckily for us, some expert advice is exactly what we have in store for you today. On today's episode of Rockin' Retail, we speak to four very special guests who are rocking it out in the retail scene, despite what analysts have to say. And they're doing it by constantly adapting, constantly innovating, and constantly moving forward. My name is Arvind Yuvaraj, and you're listening to Rockin' Retail, Episode 3. Just so you know, we'll be organizing a retail conference on May 15 called Enterprise Rocks, which is short for Retail, Outlets, Commerce, Kiosks, and Shopping. And we're stacking the panels with loads of industry experts from Lazada, Pestle & Mortar, Ipsos, Expedia, and many, many more. So if you want to go AC/DC all over the retail scene, head on over to bfm.my/rocks and get your tickets today. Now, let's kick things off on this episode with Gary Brown. He is the CEO of 7-Eleven Malaysia. Angeline Tay caught up with Gary to talk about retail and how everyone's favorite 24/7 store has continued to dominate the retail scene.
Hi, I'm Gary Brown and I'm the CEO of 7-Eleven Malaysia. I'm cautiously optimistic about the retail situation in 17. I think second half of 17 is going to be better than the first half. And I think the first half will be better than the last half of 16. That's a lot of different numbers there, but I just am cautiously optimistic in terms of what's going to happen. We need some positive stimulus to encourage consumer spending. Fortunately, though, 7-Eleven is in a sweeter spot, shall we say, than perhaps many of the other large big box retailers, where life is a lot tougher. But certainly in the convenience area, the consumer is accepting and getting used to convenience shopping as a way of life.
Okay. So at the moment, what are the challenges that, you know, convenience stores specifically are facing?
I think the number one is labour, getting enough people to meet the expanding network that 7-Eleven and other competitors, including petrol marts, etc., are expanding, and therefore having enough labour to man all of the retail outlets as we expand. I think that's the number one challenge. And then I think the second challenge is really creating and driving the need for the consumer to come to convenience stores. It's changing a mindset that a convenience store is not a mini mart, it's a convenience store. And that's very different than what consumers have been used to.
Okay. Well, so what are the ways that you're trying to overcome all these challenges at the moment? You know, what you have planned out?
Sure. Look, I think we have to create the desire for the consumer to come to our stores. And the way to do that is through product assortment, making things very convenient. Our aim is to have a consumer where they're thinking, everything I want to do, I can do in 7-Eleven. And that's very important. And by that, I mean whether you want a cup of coffee, whether you want a sandwich, some noodles, whether you want to pay a bill, or whether you simply need some health and beauty products. We have it all. That's what convenience is all about. As I say, convenience is not a mini mart, it's a convenience store, and therefore we have to offer exactly what our convenience customers want. You see it in other countries around Asia, and I think Malaysia is catching up, but we're catching up very rapidly, and we've expanded our range of services and products tremendously over the last few years. We've also added seating to a lot of our outlets, which makes it much more convenient for consumers to come and dwell and spend a little bit more time enjoying a coffee or a snack. And so that's really what we mean by creating true convenience.
Okay. And then what are your views, for 7-Eleven expansion, which would mean more outlets, right? But then people are saying that brick and mortar are, you know, sort of struggling in that sense. Is expansion considered brick and mortar for 7-Eleven? And also, what are your views on, you know, e-commerce?
Look, I think expansion for 7-Eleven is very much built around expanding outlet penetration. And by that, what I mean is that we have plenty of opportunity. If you look at other countries, we're under-penetrated compared to other countries in terms of convenience stores per million of population. So we have upside there. Also, what that does is bring convenience closer to the consumer. As you expand your network, then the network becomes more convenient to everyone, i.e. you're moving a store closer to where someone lives or to where someone works, and that makes it more convenient. So I think outlet expansion, network expansion is a natural. But as I touched on earlier, I think also product assortment and services expansion is really critical, and that's what we are focusing on as well. So you cover it two ways, really. One is through the network expansion and bringing convenience closer to the consumer. The second one is through assortment, what we call assortment, which is really the increased services and products, and making that more attractive to the consumer so that you bring an outlet closer, but you also make it more attractive to the consumer. You've got to do it two ways. You can't just bring an outlet that no one wants to shop in.
Yeah.
So we're very, very focused on improving what we deliver for the consumer.
Okay. And then what are your views about the rise of e-commerce?
Look, I think, fortunately, in terms of convenience stores, we have a very robust e-commerce platform, but that's mainly at store level in terms of bill payment, in terms of shopping through e-wallets, etc., etc. Less our e-commerce platform is less about home delivery, etc. E-commerce is obviously impacting the big box retailers through online shopping, etc. But fortunately, that's not really an impact to a convenience store. We sell cigarettes, we sell cans of drink, etc. And so no one's looking for that to be home delivered per se. But very much our e-commerce platform is built around the services, such that we've gone into parcel lockers so you can get your online shopping delivered to 7-Eleven. That's fantastically convenient. You can pay your bills 24/7. Very much convenient. So that's really how we attack the e-commerce side of things.
That was Gary Brown, CEO of 7-Eleven Malaysia. Are you enjoying all these nuggets of information so far? Are you feeling empowered enough to conquer the retail scene yet? Then you should totally stick around, because coming up next we have Lisette Shears. She runs three companies called Nala, Drink and Think. How does she do it? Like, how does she find the time and resources to manage all these companies? Find out when Rockin' Retail returns after some music and some messages, only on BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
Hey, this is Arvind Yuvaraj, and you're listening to Rockin' Retail Episode 3, and we've stacked today's show with four very special guests who are shredding the retail scene like it's 1991, and they're a band called Nirvana. Adeline Chung caught up with our next guest to know what it's like juggling three companies in today's retail scene.
My name is Lisette Shears, and I run four companies, well, three actually, one's dormant. Nala, which is a retail company, Link advertising agency, Drink, a cafe, and Think at school.
2017, what's been happening and what do you think will happen in retail space, especially in your segment?
I've opened a shop in Paris, and I've hired people in Paris as well, which is totally new. It's a huge step. So I'm trying to capitalize on trade show Maison et Objet, that's in September. So that's actually the main focus at this moment, to bring Nala to another level.
So what challenges are you facing right now?
Staff.
Why?
Because you're working with a different set of standards when you work with foreigners, when you try to export. So I'm working with the Japanese and the French. And of course, if you say, yeah, I'm giving it tomorrow and you give it a week later, it just doesn't work. There's zero tolerance for lack of communication, being late, deadlines. And that's my biggest issue now.
So how do you ensure you stay relevant?
Research, being open-minded, and open to criticism, basically.
So what inspires you?
Ooh, everything. Everything around me. But in particular, beautiful things.
Do you want to give us some example?
Well, I can walk around in Chinatown, Penang, Malacca, all those type of places.
So your products range from stationery to jewelry and home decor. Do you start out with the idea of having a wide range of products?
Yes, very, very wide. But of course, they don't all work. And that's the thing with retail. It's trial and error. There's no rules. And there's no such thing as, you know, this might be, it's just luck. It's luck, good taste, but not necessarily because the market says that this will be successful. That I've noticed that that doesn't work.
What's Nala fan base like?
The majority Malay.
Does your target audience differ from them?
No, my target audience are Malaysians. Of course, I would like to have it a bit broader, but for now, the majority are Malaysians. Malays, sorry.
So you've dipped your foot in so many things. You're the creator of Nala Designs, your own Link, a multidisciplinary design agency. You've opened Drink, a cozy cafe and store. How are you keeping everything afloat?
Just living day by day and getting through day by day and working very hard.
Now, you have a knack for retail experience. Nala's products are available on both big box departmental retail outlets, and you also focus on online channel as well. How do you approach the two channels differently?
It's also research, listening to your promoters. You have to have lots of meetings. And it's, once again, it's trial and error. There's no fixed rule. Sometimes you think this is going to be a great idea. Like, for example, with Isetan, we have a 20% discount. If you take an Instagram shot and you hashtag, which is great, super simple, but no one has Instagram. It's weird.
No one has Instagram?
Well, not the people that go to Isetan KLCC. See, so you can't plan for that, right? You think it's the deal of the century. And my promoters, everyone that comes here doesn't have Instagram.
So do you think Malaysians are receptive to your designs and would spend on locally made products?
Yeah, they do. I'm really proud. They love it. Yeah, really, really cool.
Do you get more expats or local people buying from you?
Do you want me to go into literal segments? Yeah. So Malays, the majority, Chinese as well, the ones that are into culture, Indians, almost zero, and tourists, depending where they come from. So Americans, not really. French, love it. Germans love it, interesting enough. And the Swiss. Dutch, zero. I have zero support from the Dutch community. I have no idea why.
What are the opportunities do you see in this space?
Well, I think it's for me, the objective at the end of the day is also that we have to be proud of what we have in this country, but also try and save what's the little bit that's left. You know, we're just tearing everything down. It's just crazy. And hopefully with what I'm doing, people will understand that you can also make money with the heritage. And at the end of the day, that's what the tourists want. So hopefully I will be the only, I think by now I am the only location that has a brand in an old kampong house. And hopefully that will wake up or open a few doors.
If there's one thing that retailers should do, what would that be?
You have to reinvent yourself nonstop. It's super tiring. It's very different than the other companies that that I have. Like with advertising, for example, you just have an idea, they like it, you sell it, you send the bill. But with retail, you have no clue. So you think you have a brilliant idea, and then you put it out in the market, and then nobody buys it. So you have to be super proactive and very alert and flexible to keep on changing and coming up with new ideas. And that's the great thing about living in Malaysia, I suppose, that it's quite easy if you have a good idea to execute it fast and inexpensively.
expert insights from Lisette Shears, who runs three companies at the moment called Nala, Drink and Think. And we're only halfway done. There's way more to go. We are going to get some messages in, but do stick around because coming up after the break is Vivian Yap, the Customer and Marketing Director of Tesco Malaysia. This is Rockin' Retail, Episode 3, BFM 89.9.
Bring forth money. BFM 89.9.
Hey, you're listening to Rockin' Retail. My name is Arvind Yuvaraj, and today we're getting insights from four very special guests who have made the retail scene their jam. Now, you've all been at Tesco, right? It's a giant name in the retail scene, but no brand gets to where it is without a steady stream of customers. With that in mind, Angeline Tay caught up with our next guest to talk about how Tesco takes care of its customers and what it means to keep those customers happy all year long.
Hi, I'm Vivian Yap, and I work for Tesco as the Customer and Marketing Director. So I look after customers for Tesco.
So first of all, tell me, in 2017, what's been happening and what do you think will happen for the retail space in 2017?
Well, I think 2017 started off quite well because it was Chinese New Year, and we still see people shopping for the festive season, but it's a little bit low-key for a lot of people. I think we did quite well in Tesco because we focused on what the customer wanted and what the customer needed. Now that we're into the first quarter, I think we're beginning to see it's going to be a bit of a challenge because I think consumer sentiments are a little bit down. There is a lot of concerns around your own personal financial securities and stuff like that. So when you talk to customers, customers are already looking at, you know, how they would look at how they would spend for food and necessities. They will still buy, but I think they will look for alternatives that provides more value. They will also look for, people will talk about looking for promotions. I think that's one segment. But we also see customers that are also looking for convenience, looking to make it easy for them to shop. So we also look at that, and we used our multi-channel platform to cater to these customers. And when we talk about multi-channel, Tesco has got grocery online shopping where you can order and deliver to you. We have also worked with, we have our shop-in-shop in platforms like Lazada, Gem5, and Happy Fresh, which also can deliver to your home, and they shop in Tesco and send it to you. So we are looking for ways to work with people to make it easy for customers to shop with us, so customers can generally go in. So if you are even staying somewhere very far away from Tesco, you can pick and shop with these platforms, and we deliver it to you. So we are working on how to invest for customers in providing the right value. We are working to find different platforms to make it easy and convenient for shoppers who need that. So, because that's where we see the customers are going right now.
Okay. And would you be able to tell us, you know, in terms of revenue, I guess, for online, people who shop online versus people who shop in the brick and mortar? Clearly, there's a big divide, but, you know, how much at the moment and how fast do you see it's growing?
Well, I can't reveal to you how much, basically. Obviously, it's still a small part of our business, but it's growing very well for us. And we know that when you look at the trends and you look at the future, I think it's definitely going to grow. Now, typically in Malaysia, if you look at the stats from the research, a lot of Malaysians shop online for clothing, for health and beauty care, and electronics. That's something that they have been shopping not only on Malaysian sites, but overseas sites. So that has been the one that has been driving the online shopping in Malaysia. Of late, the food shopping has also now become part and parcel of that game, and it's going to grow very much more important in the future of people's lives. So it's not, it's an important part for us, and it's a growth part of the business, basically. Mm. Yeah?
Okay, but a big bulk would still be the brick and mortar.
We will still invest in our shops. In fact, we just opened a new store up in Jitra, which is doing very well. So we will still look at opening stores where it's relevant. I think it's not to say that we will stop doing one and going to... I think like somebody said here, you know, how do you balance it? And I think for customers, there are... Customers can shop multi-channel, and even when we say multi-channel, the store is a channel. Mm. Isn't it? So you have a choice now. So you have time and it's close to your home. You can walk into the shop and you can do your shopping there. And some customers still love to do that. So I have customers who tell, I still like to go and browse around. Fantastic. We love to welcome you. But there are customers who know what they want and they don't have time. Or by the time they are free, the shops are closed. You know, so I think it's a customer's lifestyle will dictate how they want to shop. Our objective is try to be there for the customer whichever way they want to shop.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then so what are the challenges that Tesco is facing at the moment?
There are many challenges. I think we all look at how do we get to the customer, because the scenario out there is there's a lot of competition, there's a lot of new players. And when we talk about competition, again, there are brick stores and there are online players, you know. So those are competitions. So we have to learn and we have to keep up and we have to then think about what we want to do for this customer. So that is always a constant challenge. I think other challenges would be usual business challenges where you talk about people and people development. I mean, we are talking here about productivity. That's something we talk a lot about in Tesco, you know. So I think it's any other usual business that when you are growing, you will always start looking at development of people, because that's the core of how we will grow in the future. So that is also another thing that we invest and we look at. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we make Tesco not only a great place to shop, but it's also a great place to work, basically.
Okay.
Yeah?
All right. Any tips for, you know, small businesses who wants to train their staff to give better service? Because I think services in an outlet is always the toughest, thing to train.
I wouldn't dare to say I'm an expert on it, but I think all of us, even in Tesco, we are always looking for ways to help improve service. I think the first thing for me when I learned is you got to talk to the customers and you got to listen to the customers. And when we listen to customers, sometimes being human, we can be very, we shut down because, the customer is complaining too much or the customer is saying, that doesn't matter. I think the customer, if we can just listen and we can get to the root cause of what the customer is saying, no matter how angry or whatever, you know, we will find that there is something in there that we can learn from that customer and we can then try and fix. And for me, I think, you know, service is a never-ending thing. It's not like you start today and end tomorrow, because you fix one thing, something else will come up.
Yeah.
So I think it's a constant listening and just being patient to work through one problem at a time and just get it right one problem at a time. And over time, we would have delivered a lot better shopping experience.
Yeah, but because I think Malaysia sort of have that very low standard for service.
It's changing. I think it's changing. I think the fact that, you know, I think people are more educated. A lot of people have come back from overseas, have experienced a lot of different things. So there is a difference. And Malaysians are more well-traveled nowadays, you know, so you see a lot more outside. So there's a little bit more higher expectation. So it's changing. Mm-hmm. So we have to keep up with that as well.
Okay. Any opportunities that you're seeing, you know, in the retail space?
I think there are still a lot of opportunity in the retail space, but I think the key thing for each of us is how do we find something that can help differentiate ourselves from competitors. So what do we want to stand for so that the customer recognizes us for that? Because everybody is going to be out there and there are some who will copy one another, which will happen in the market. So as a retailer, we always have to think about, if you're going to do it, yes, what can you do and what can you be different and how will the customer know about that? So that's still an opportunity to do that. Not easy, but still there.
Lots of information to absorb, digest and apply from Vivian Yap right there. But I think the major takeaway is that the customer is key. And hey, we're not even done yet. This show isn't over. We've got one more guest to go. And for those of you who love custom-made shoes, you're gonna love this. Think of it as a really good encore. Rockin' Retail will be back before you can say Sweet Child of Mine, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Rockin' Retail. My name is Arvind Yuvaraj, and this is episode 3 of the show where we stack the decks with experts and industry leaders who can show you how to rock the retail scene. Adeline Chung caught up with Christy Ng of Christy Ng Shoes, a brand famous for designing custom shoes online that recently decided to go the brick and mortar route. Going physical in a digital world, that's kind of odd, right? Christy Ng explains her strategy.
Hi, my name is Christy, and I'm a shoe designer. So I run an internet shoe brand called Christy Ng Shoes, which recently went on to the brick and mortar route.
Now, at Christy Ng, you have a different set of challenges altogether because you're servicing customers abroad too. Now, what are those challenges compared to retailers serving Malaysian market?
Malaysian market is not really a super easy market also, okay? Because we have our population is not homogeneous. We have a lot of different ethnicities, we've got different races, we've got different cultures. So I say if your business can take off in Malaysia, I think you won't have a problem taking off in the West. This is my opinion, and my opinion alone. Yeah, because here, there are a lot of different cultures, there are a lot of different behaviours. Our population is not like, you know, in America where it's more homogeneous. Like, there's only like one or two different, there are not many different races, you know, and there's only one language, English. But whereas in Malaysia, it's a fragmented market because we have the native language speakers who speak Bahasa. We have people who speak Mandarin, and that's a huge sizable market as well. And we've got the people who speak Tamil. And I think you must be able to adapt to, you know, you must be able to control and adapt and evolve your product, your merchandise offering to suit the different population types. Yeah.
And how do you ensure you stay relevant?
Like I said before, I'm a very data-driven person, and I approach this business like a science experiment. So I look into data, I look into trends, and you know, data does not lie. And from the data, we can see where the trend is heading to. A lot of retailers would have noticed that department stores are on downtrend. This is like a nationwide, worldwide phenomenon. So these are like telling signs that, you know, shopping has become more of a destination, an experience. So people go to retail when people go to a mall, they no longer, you know, like go there without purpose or go there just to browse or get free air conditioning. They go there with a purpose. And usually before they go to a mall, there's always a few brands within that shopping mall which they want to check out. So I think this is a behavioural change that a lot of retailers need to understand. Today, consumers are spoiled for choice. There are so many choices. The choices are unlimited. You can shop from local websites, from websites abroad. How to, you know, keep the business relevant is to make sure that your brand resonates with the consumer, and when a consumer goes to any mall, they will go there with the intention to find your brand. You have to be a destination retailer, not a retailer who opens a store in a mall and becomes a parasite just to leech off the traffic which the mall already has. Because even if the mall is packed with people, it doesn't mean that those people walk into your store and buy. I think you need to have enough of engagement, enough of interaction, and enough of presence where consumers would, you know, when they want something, like for instance, if you want a pair of wedding shoes, you will come to Christy Ng Shoes. So we've become, I think this is one of our main selling points, because we become a very destination, we are a destination for customers. We have customers from, you know, the East Coast, the West Coast, where we don't have stores. They purposely come all the way to, say, Wan Utama or Mai Tau just to look for our brand and to be able to buy our shoes. So we have been, we are able to draw in crowd, we're able to draw in traffic like that. So I think that is one of the reasons why we are able to cope in this difficult economy.
You went from online to brick and mortar with outlets in prime areas in KL. People today are staying away from physical outlets. Why have you decided to do so?
Okay, if you look at one of the most popular e-commerce stores on the planet, which is ASOS, okay, everyone has bought something there before. They house a lot of international brands and a lot of different, you know, high street labels and stuff like that. All these labels which they house all have brick and mortar stores. You think about it. They sell Nike, they sell Adidas, they sell, you know, Lipsy or River Island. All these brands, they have physical stores. And the physical stores serve as a point of contact, point of engagement. And I would say that human behavior and human the human buying behavior is different from one person to another. And in this modern world with technology, I find that you need to serve all these different human behaviors and all these different buying patterns. You need to have more than just one outlet or one channel to drive your sales. This is my opinion.
What are the differences in online and offline buying behavior at Christy Ng?
Okay, we have a few types of customers. The first type, they're so comfortable. They know their size. They're so confident. They bought a line. They know how to exchange. It's so easy for them. They just prefer to buy online because they don't like to go out the house. You know, they hate shopping malls. You know, the parking is difficult. They work during the weekdays. They love to have the luxury of their shoes sent to their office. You know, I've got that set of customers. I've got another set who look at the website, browse for hours, but don't buy anything because scared don't fit. And according to the studies that we've done, this segment of customers is huge. A lot of them are like that. They browse. We have all the web traffic, but all that web traffic is not converting into the dollars that I anticipate it to be. So I knew that I need to do something different in order to capture that huge, you know, all these visitors who end up not buying. There's something more to that. That it is a human element, you know. And then I ask myself, in my life, how many times did I buy shoes online? Not really many times, I think. From there, I knew that, you know, there is a need for physical stores. Like ASOS, a lot of the top-selling brands, they all have physical stores. So it's not rocket science. So I just observed the trend and the buying behavior. Then I knew that there was a huge need for us to have a retail store to capture that group of customers who like to see but they don't buy because they're scared of the sizes, they want to try. And then there's a third group of customers who... You cannot predict what they want to do. They just sometimes they go to your store, then they go back home, buy online. Some buy online, then cannot fit. They want to go to the store and exchange the shoe because it doesn't fit. So I studied the Barnes & Noble model in the US. You know, Barnes & Noble, they have O2O and it's worked amazing for them. Customers shopped online in Barnes & Nobles and if it doesn't fit, if they are not happy with the purchase, they can exchange at any of their stores. So I think that model really inspired me, and I knew that if they were doing it on such a big scale, it's definitely proven and there's definitely a reason why these people are doing it.
So if there's one thing that, you know, retailers should do, what would that be?
Retailers should start thinking how to solve problems. You know, what does the customer need? What kind of problems does the customer face? Look into the problems, give customers a solution. Then the business will come. When you can solve, the more problems you solve, the more customers will come to you. You don't even need to advertise. So yeah, that's very important. We are not just trading. We are doing a lot of R&D. I think a lot of retailers, they don't do research. They don't do R&D for their product, their merchandise mix. They just look at magazines, they copy here and there, and then they sell. Okay, this is not what we're doing here. Okay, at our company, we do a lot of research. We make a lot of samples. We test these samples. We make sure that we're really satisfied with the samples, whether this sample will solve problems of certain segments of women before we release the design into the market. We test the prototype. We do it like a science experiment. We're not just selling a shoe for the sake of selling it because I like the colour. So there's a lot of thought that we put in behind every step to make that shoe. So that's the difference between us and another retailer. And I'm committed on this R&D part to make shoes that are really different, that are different from the rest of the market.
Christy Ng of Christy Ng Shoes giving her insights on why she decided to take her online business to a brick and mortar business. If you missed part of the show or if you missed the previous Rockin' Retail episodes, don't worry about it. Just download the BFM app from the App Store or on Google Play and stream the episodes there anytime, any place. It's really that simple. I'd also like to thank all our guests on the episode for giving us insights on how to maneuver and take control of the different aspects and challenges of today's retail scene. Analysts say that 2017 could be a bumpy ride for retail, but based on what we heard from our guests today, not only are they up for the challenge, but they're also determined to thrive in the changing times. So let me close the curtains on today's episode by asking you the same question from the top of the program. What does it mean to rock something? This is Arvind Yuvaraj, and don't forget to get your tickets to Enterprise Rocks happening next week at bfm.my/rocks. And I hope to see all of you there in person. Raise Your Game is up next, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.